This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's the Luke and Pete Show. It's a Thursday. I hope it's sunning. I hope it's sunny where you are, or if you are a person who prefers a more watery experience, I hope it's raining in your heart. I'm in pain, Luke. Yeah. I ate a burger from last night's Deliveroo order. It turned up this time. Yeah, and now, yeah, it's turning up twice, and it's I went in for my second go at this gigantic, stupid burger, and I'm not faring well, to be honest.
Where'd you get it from?
Nowhere to start your day. It was this weird off-brand. It was called... Their big thing was that their burgers are bigger than everyone's. Not better, not made with finer quality ingredients, just bigger. Right. And they were incredibly expensive, but they had a 50% off offer. And that kind of lured me in. And I think I've just been sold an absolute kipper. It looks like something my mum used to make in the 80s.
Well, if it's a kipper, it tastes disgusting in the morning.
There is
one. You know my feeling on this, and I know you've flouted my feeling, my recommendations on more than one occasion. There's
flouted
only one
feeling.
Yeah, there's only one takeaway type that is suitable to be eaten the next morning, and it's pizza. That's it.
Chinese.
It's a terrible shout. You've always got stomach problems. You're like Kurt Cobain. It's endless stomach issues because all you do is eat takeaway food in the
morning.
I just
want any excuse to have a bit of heroin, that's all. Always. He didn't want to go on to it. That's it, you know, it's because he had terrible stomach pains. It was also heroin as well. It's like the bloke, I would sort of say the bloke out of Sublime. I'm fairly, like, an ex-girlfriend was obsessed with Sublime. She said it was the first time he ever took heroin when he died. I was like, that doesn't sound like what happened.
I don't know anything about Sublime. I couldn't even name one of their songs. But Peter,
Santeria is very popular around the sort of Texas area. You hear it in every cafe or bar. It's weird.
I've probably heard it and not known what it was. Do you mind just taking over for a couple of seconds? Because I think I might need to sneeze.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of OPM Heaven is a Half Pipe, it's kind of what they were based on, effectively. They'd based, the, you know, that early in the morning. That one, that's Sublime. So you'll know that one.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I know that one. Yeah, it sounds exactly like Lady Madonna by the Beatles.
Oh, yeah. So they were the original OPMs then, basically.
I thought you were going to say they're the original Beatles. I just muted my mic to have a quick sneeze. That's where I went there. Okay. Thank you very much.
Enjoy.
It's very nice, very enjoyable. Luke and Pete Show, for those of you who don't know, we talk rubbish every show, twice a week. It's worked for a few years now. Thought we'd just stick with it. But I was pointed in the direction, and I promised this on Monday's show, so I'm delivering on that promise, which is unlike me because I normally forget. Matt Potter put this story, brought this story to my attention, and it's up there with one of the best newspaper headlines I think I've read for quite some time, and it goes like this: cocaine in the River Thames is another problem eels don't need, says expert.
Yeah. Oh no, the eels again, they're the ones who are getting lonely in the zoo.
Yeah, I know. And apparently so more and more people are washing cocaine into the River Thames by flushing it down the toilet, by all sorts of different reasons.
Secreting it.
Apparently...
Maybe pooping it.
yeah. Apparently, it's really, really bad for fish, but particularly eels. And the guy who's quoted in this, I think he's some kind of marine biologist, he makes an interesting point, Pete, and I'd like your thoughts on it. He says, fish and eels struggle, and people are more likely to care about more charismatic and cuddly animals, but species of eel are really important to the ecosystem. Who's thinking of the eels? Hey?
Who's thinking of the eels? I'm trying to think of the man's name from the band The Eels. Wasn't he just called E?
Mark Everett.
Mark Everett. That's right, yeah. I mean, I think about eels quite a lot. For some reason, YouTube always suggests that Eats program where the man goes to, I think it's like a Vice documentary sort of series, where a man goes to an East London eels and pie shop, and this guy manages to like gut an eel in about 10 seconds with a big sharp blade. And he's got horribly big hands.
Yeah.
It's frightening. I think about how non-delicious eels are and how much I'd rather them just stay in the sea. So, yeah, I think about them quite a lot, to be honest.
Do you like jellied eels?
They're one of those things that I don't want to impress the people who like them, so I want to keep eating them.
I'd have thought it'd be something you would lap up. I thought you'd really like it. It feels to me like you're
I've had them a few times, and again, every time I've been presented with some jellied eels, I've eaten them because I want to acquire a taste, but they're just hard work, aren't they? They don't taste of anything in particular. Like, you've got to put loads of you've got to put something on them to make them taste in any of anything, really. It's an unlovable fish. I think we just leave them be. Why are they in jelly? Where's the jelly come from? Why is that a part of it?
I think the jelly comes from their kind of their makeup, doesn't it? I think they are quite gelatinous, and then maybe they add gelatin to it, but they I think they're naturally quite gelatinous.
Interesting, right?
Because they're boiled, aren't they? And they're left to cool.
They're just so tight. The meat is just so tight. Maybe I could have some like gourmet version of it, and it would taste amazing. But I just, it's like every time I go to a French restaurant, I'll have a crack at snails, and that took me a long time to get around. I've got the taste for it now. I kind of understand what I'm working with. But
snails just taste for me, just garlic, though, right?
Grass. Taste of grass. Doesn't taste of garlic. It just tastes of grass. I've said it before on this before. But eels, can't be arsed with eating them. I've had them in a few different ways, not just jellied, and I've just not found the dish for me, quite frankly.
In one part of because snails are obviously, people think of France when they think of snails. But there's a county in England, I want to say Lincolnshire, but that might not be right. Well, there's a huge tradition of eating snails, and they call them they call them wallfish.
Wallfish?
They do. And they eat them. They've been eating them for hundreds of years, but no one really talks about them because I suppose it's not seen as fashionable, I guess.
Mm. What's that big? Isn't the big one of those big slugs that look like penises that people eat?
I don't know. It's one of your worst chap lies, I'll tell you.
I'm having a look. Is it just geoduck? It's a clam, but it looks like a big slug. And it contains so much water. You have it on your plate, and when you sort of pick it up, it still kind of squirts out water because there's so much water in it.
It's not familiar.
Give it a Google. It comes in a perfectly amiable kind of shell that you can hold the bottom of and just eat, and people just sort of just chew the top of it, of this giant sort of clam thing. I'm sure it's lovely and delicious, but they just look too much. They look like wangers. There's no two ways about them. They look like wangers.
I'm quite a squeamish eater, so anything that's like, I'm not really into it. Particularly stuff like offaly stuff, but the one thing I do find interesting is that people love to virtue signal about how much they love every food and how like it's tedious when people it's odd to me how you'll get real foodies who'll say, oh, I'll eat absolutely everything, and they're really virtue signal about it. But then it's kind of confusing, because it's like, well, if you're such a discerning guy when it comes to food or girl, then surely you won't eat everything, because it's like me saying I love music, but I'll listen to anything. People who say, oh, I'll listen to anything, don't know anything about music, do they? That's part of the thing they say. So it doesn't really make any sense. Like, oh, I'm a big film fan. What films do you like? All of them. It doesn't make any sense.
Films. That's one something I didn't say on the Ramble on Monday. We were watching the film Goal 2. And remember, like, Michael Owen's like just not into films at all. He hates them, and he's got five films he watched, et cetera, et cetera. He's actually in that film, and that wasn't on his list. I think I may have said that on the Ramble.
So he's in more films than he's seen?
He's in a fifth of the films... Yeah, it's outside the circle of the films he's seen, but he's in the film, so it's kind of confusing. And he's probably in a few more films as well. I reckon his footage of Michael Owen has ended up in more... If we went to Michael Owen's IMDb, there'll be some feature films that he's managed to find himself into, his way into, and very, very
His strange. Ratio would be absolutely unreal. Most of us, we would have watched 1,000 films and not been in any.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I've got... for some reason... I think when I was researching Goal 2, I was trying to find... I was like, oh, it's weird that like footballers have IMDb pages, but of course they do. I think I'm the only member of the Ramble for some weird reason that has an IMDb, but it's only because of a film from the Stakhanov podcast stable abroad in Japan. He did like an online YouTube video where he went across Japan, and I'm involved in that. So that's the only reason why I've got an IMDb page. I've not done any other things in that sphere. So I don't know who set it up, but somebody did. And they put Pete Donaldson, and I think I'm the second one on the IMDb.
That's annoying me.
It was very exciting. It was very exciting, Luke.
That annoys me because my whole career is a testament to me trying to be better than you at stuff. And so now I'm going to have to try and do that.
Okay.
But, you know, Pete, I wanted to bring to you, to our attention a revisit of the Quiet Chamber you talked about, because Chris Frost sent me a link on Twitter about the that is it called an anechoic chamber?
Well, I mean, it's without echo, so yeah, I imagine that would be a pretty good way of describing it.
Yeah, that's what they call them anyway. But you were talking about, weren't you, how it was like the quietest place in the world or something. And I don't really remember. Say again?
And you go loopy after a while.
Yeah, so apparently... There's one developed by Microsoft, this quiet chamber up in Washington State, which has now got the world record as being the quietest place on Earth. But the link that that Chris sent was for a guy for a place called Orfield Labs Quiet Chamber, which is in Minneapolis. Right. And but the question I wanted to ask you, because I can't actually remember how much detail you went into, but basically it's this room that's set up to block all sound completely. But for perspective, a typical bedroom at night, a regular quiet bedroom at night, measures at about 30 decibels, right? This chamber measures at -9 decibels. And I wanted to ask you
How they managed to get it to minus?
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask you. Doesn't make
Is
any
it
sense.
Like kind of not phase change? Like, you know, when you, you know how like noise-cancelling headphones work? I think they play the complete inverse audio into your ears at the same time to block out the sound. So basically,
I thought they emitted certain things to head off sounds when they reach you.
This is complete nonsense, but it basically records everything that's going on outside and very quickly fires that same information inversed, like inversed the old. Oh. I don't know what inversed. I really don't. I've been working with audio for such a long time, and I don't know what inverse phase and all that stuff means. But it basically reverses that audio and fires a complete mirror image of that audio at you, so your brain knows to cancel it out effectively. So it's your brain that's doing all the work there. But I do. But so maybe that's what they're doing. They're not only zero decibels. They're actually, you know, making it even, they're making it louder on the other spectrum. I don't really know. It's so confusing. But I just know that if I ever set foot in one of those bloody rooms, I would instantly die. I'd be left alone with my thoughts, and they would be so loud, my head would explode.
Well, exactly. That's one of the interesting things about it. So it is amazing. It's obviously an amazing piece of technology, and they use it for to get a properly neutral background. So, like, and one of the examples they use in the article that Chris sent me was companies like
Prog.
Harley Davidson use it to create quieter bikes, but make sure they still sound like the traditional Harley Davidson sound, for example. Right. And it's stuff like they use it to test LED displays to make sure they're not too loud and that kind of thing. But anyway, so you can only go in there for a short supervised stay, but sometimes reporters go in there to do columns or whatever. But the record is that the record for staying in there is only 45 minutes, and most people leave well under half that time, because apparently your ears adapt to the silence, but you can still hear stuff like your heartbeat, your stomach, your lungs, and it's apparently really, really odd because you become the sound, basically.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like it.
It's very strange.
I don't like it.
I'd love to put you in there.
Yeah, I'd love to stay there for a little while and just play out some really underwhelming ska punk from the 90s. Cool.
As it was meant to be heard.
As it was meant to be heard. Actually, speaking of which, you very helpfully put a little Twitter shout out. What you want us to talk about. The Tony Hawk remaster coming out in December, asks Douglas Quaver Jr. They're going to be remastering Tony Hawk's 1 and 2 of the video games from the PlayStation.
Couldn't get rights to all the music, though, could they?
Yeah, they've had to remove a couple of them, and they certainly have done in the past. They've remastered them so many bloody times for mobile and a couple of other things. And they've
what always... platform will this one be on? Would it be on Switch?
I think it'll be... Oh, I would say it's probably heading for Switch. Certainly PlayStation and Xbox. You never know with them. But yeah, they always sort of have to fiddle with it a little bit, just simply because they just feel like they have to. They did remaster the first one a little while ago, and it was an absolute shit show. So everyone's getting very excited. I've had my ear to the ground on the whole Tony Hawk remaking kind of world. And let's just say I'm not holding out much hope for this being any good. But I do like the fact that they're going to be aging all of the skaters appropriately. So there's going to be, you know, a 55-year-old Tony Hawk playing in a school, probably.
That's stupid.
It's a skateboarding in a school in the video game.
That's ridiculous. I loved that game back in the day. It was a big vibe back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
But you're not going to be hearing Public Enemy and Anthrax. That's all we're saying.
Well, the noise. That's a classic tune. Is it going to have Superman on it? Goldfinger Superman?
I think it will. I don't think you can get away with removing Lagwagon's May 16th or Superman by Goldfinger, who are doing quite a lot of stuff on...
It's their pension.
I think they're reminding of us, and I think they're probably, this COVID thing has kind of coincided with their sort of live sessions over the internet kind of thing. They've probably done quite well out of it, because no one's really talking about Goldfinger at the moment.
No.
For obvious reasons.
Exactly. Yeah,
other subjects coming in, Titanic conspiracy theories. I mean, we've got very little time to research that, Rallan. Korean sex dolls. We talked about that on the Football Ramble on Monday. Your favourite dinosaur and why, Barney excluded. What's your favourite dinosaur, Luke?
Probably Denver.
He was the last one. Last one in, first one in your heart. That's what
the
say.
Problem is he had a very problematic theme tune, as we talked about before.
He's your friend and a whole lot more. Friends
yeah.
of benefits.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs of benefits.
And he just always does is hang out with kids.
Yeah. It's not right. Mine was probably the baby out of dinosaurs. Not
that. Yeah, that's a good shout. By the way, I didn't realise this, but you said there that Titanic conspiracy theories. I had no idea that was even a thing, and I've just Wikipedia'd it, and there's a massive, massive article about it. So I might read that later.
It never happened. Yeah, let's pick that one up on Monday.
Turns out it's still knocking about, and you can go on it if you want.
Yeah, you can find it. Yeah, I like the fact that sort of people are sort of doing versions of what people would be like if the Titanic went down, like now.
Yeah.
There'd be sort of like truthers and like, did it really happen? All this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think you need, like, I think lifeboats are overrated, you know, paralleling the COVID mask sort of thing, stuff like that. They don't protect your head and stuff. It's just so many good memes going around.
You know, the Titanic has got what is the source of one of the best movie quotes of all time, where there was a movie made in 1980 called Raise the Titanic. I can't remember the source, the specific source of the quote. Might have been the director, might have been the guy who funded it, but it was a bomb. It did nothing. It was terrible. It cost $40 million to make, and it grossed $7 million, and that was it. And it was the producer, Lou Grade, who, when he was asked about it in retrospect, said it would have been cheaper to lower the Atlantic. Which is a great one.
That's such a good quote. Lovely. Yeah. All right, brilliant. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with some of your emails. Hello at lukeandpitchshow.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the Ivory Tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Petersen went to Spielberg and went, yeah, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E.T., mate. I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
And we're back. Hope you enjoyed that. Emails, Luke, have you got one for us?
I have. I've got one about quantum physics, Pete. And if there's anyone...
Oh, no.
If there's one email that's titled that's going to put you off anymore, it's probably an email about quantum physics. But it's from Jamie. Now, I mentioned, didn't I, something about the fascination of quantum physics to the extent that I understand it, which is pretty much non-existent. But it just so turns out that our listener friend, Jamie, has only discovered the Luke and Pete show recently. And yeah, he's called it a godsend. His words, not mine.
The god particle.
Yeah,
the god particle quite, podcast. Exactly.
He says, though, I actually listen to it when I'm taking a break from studying for my exams for my master's degree in theoretical physics. So I'm probably in the perfect position to answer your call from the last episode. I mean,
he's not finished it. He's not got through that. He's not got through the finishing tip just yet. So
no,
not the perfect.
I mean, I'll address the gigantic elephant in the room, which is why a man who is clearly this intelligent is listening to the Luke and Pete show. But that's his problem, not ours. So Jamie says, in quantum physics, so see how much of this you can get, because I think Jamie explains it in quite an interesting way. He says, in quantum physics, if we want to predict where a particle might be, we do quantum physics specific maths to calculate its probability of being in different positions. i.e. the maths is different from what you'd use to calculate the position of the moon, for example. If you sketch the probability with positions on a graph, it would be a wave. But when we observe the particle, we know where it is, so we can narrow down its position to an almost exact point, almost because of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, because quantum mechanics is weird, but I'm not going into that now. He said, we call this the wave function collapsing to a state, as we used to need a wave to describe the particle, but now we can just say where it is. The Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics says that this is physically what is happening, that particles are probably waves until we observe them, upon which they collapse into an object at a point. This is well supported by evidence, like the double slit experiment that Luke mentioned, but isn't actually proven. And some physicists still believe that there is something subtler going on physically. We just don't, and we just have a good mathematical model for it. Finally, about your point observing the moon, which I said was in theory that if no one observed the moon, would it actually exist? He says, we don't actually know what would happen if nothing were observing it. So far, quantum mechanics only seems to affect incredibly small things. Quite at what point and why the universe stops obeying classical physics and starts obeying quantum physics, we don't yet know. Hope that's cleared some stuff up for you guys. And if you want to know more, check out QED by Richard Feynman, a great book by one of the greatest teachers and scientists of all time. Thank you for keeping me sane. Jamie.
I mean, recommending a book at the end, I've got to get over the hurdle first, Jamie. Yeah. What a book. So,
Pete's actually written more books than he's read.
I mean, quantum mechanics and quantum physics, it sounds very much like the study of musical statues. So that's what I'm kind of working on.
Yeah, it's a bit.
It's a wave until you look at it and then it's like, whoa, steady, I wasn't doing nothing. I wasn't doing nothing, sir. I was just studying the whole time, baby.
But that's what I'm pretty sure. Jamie can tell us more about this. I'm pretty sure that's the principle behind Schrodinger's cat, because you put a cat in a box, and if some subatomic particles react in a certain way, they emit a gas which kills the cat, but they might not, which doesn't kill the cat. But it only happens if you observe it. So therefore, the cat is technically dead and alive at the same time. And because you only find out by opening the box, right? That's a really shit way of explaining it, but that's essentially the principle as far as I understand it. Jamie can give us more information on that, but I think that's a way of trying to describe what happens at a subatomic level in the quantum world at a much bigger macro level. And that's the example they use. Jamie will hopefully email back in and give us a load more of a better explanation than that. But that to me is absolutely fascinating.
Oh yeah, and like the Schrodinger's cat thing, like the. I mean, you could simplify it even further. You don't even need to sort of talk about how the cat might be alive or might be dead. Just either the cat is alive or the cat is dead, and we don't know until we open the box and look at the cat. Either way, you shouldn't bring it into the library, sir.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
And you know, and in dear old Toby's case, the dirty nappy's either on the doorstep or it isn't. You're not going to find out until you open the door.
Oh, that feeling, though, of like opening your front door and there might be a dirty nappy sat there fresh, or there might not be. It might be all over your garden. It might maybe we have stumbled onto a beautifully kind of like you know.
This is now getting a little bit
interesting, kind of like
a little bit gothic. Where is the cat in the garden? It's all over the garden.
It's all over the place. Well, speaking of physicists, we got an email from Timothy Brown, D. Ream, Brian Cox, and a lot of gaffer tape. Dear Luke and Pete, listening to Pete's birthday special and mentioning D. Ream reminded me of a great story concerning the band. This story comes from an old chemistry teacher, let's call him Dr. T. Through the years, there'd always been rumours about Dr. T having a bit of a rock star pass and annoying a few celebrities.
It sounds like a rapper.
Yes, Dr. T does. After a sixth form of needling questions in our final lesson, he conceded that in the 80s, he'd been a roadie for a few bands and European tours, including the aforementioned D. Ream. Obviously, this name drop didn't have much impact on an ignorant group of millennials, although the name Brian Cox did get a few murmurs of interest. Keen to milk the audience's Dr. T tells a story about one of D. Ream's earlier tours. A young Brian Cox, head swollen with fame, was getting a bit big for his boots. After a show and after one demand too many, a group of roadies, Dr. T included, grabbed Brian and gaffer-taped him to a lighting rig, hoisted him several metres off the ground whilst they packed the rest of the kit up. Safe to say, Brian piped down after this. Dr. T still meets Brian for a curry every year and informed us that Brian doesn't have a favourite curry but prefers to explore the chef's specials. Thanks for getting the show going. It's a welcome relief from the banalities of lockdown life. Have you ever taped a physicist to a post? Let us know.
It was merely an experiment to show gravity at work.
It was indeed, yeah.
It was. I think those roadies should respect the talent. That's what I think. And they'd be very lucky to keep a job carrying like that.
I think maybe he probably wasn't that much in charge of D-Ream. Maybe he just didn't have that much sway. I mean, I'm like, out of the Monday and Friday collection on the Football Ramble, I'm sort of thinking, is there anybody we couldn't tape to a post? Like, I'd get taped to the post and I couldn't get anyone fired. You the same.
Yeah.
Marcus might incur the wrath of the Lord. I don't know. I think Brassel or Jules on a Tuesday. Yeah. If we tape one of them, we'd be in serious physical danger or trouble.
I would never gaffer tape either Andy or Jules to a post because they're too nice.
Jules, you could use like a stamp, I reckon.
Yeah, she'd also kick your ass as well. But the thing is, I think we've developed enough of a kind of hierarchy, but like a culture at Football Ramble Daily where no one is really too big for their boots. If someone got taped, I think everyone else would just find it really funny. So there would be no problem. But Pete, one thing I do want to say is I remember speaking to you on a Monday at work once after a Sunday night Brian Cox episode on the BBC. It was probably Wonders of the Universe. I talked to you about how great it was, and you replied saying you've never watched any of his shows because you don't like his face.
Yeah, I don't like his lips.
You said he looks like he's wearing a death mask of his own face, is what you said.
It just looks all stretched.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where he came. I don't know why he suddenly became, because he was always the bloke on Sean Keaveney's Six Breakfast Show.
Yeah,
and
he was always really great on that.
But then he sort of appeared less and less on that and kind of appeared more and more on that was my chair, not a pump, by the way.
I didn't hear
more on the telly, and I always just thought, like, oh, it's just that guy from Sean Keaveney's Breakfast Show.
But the point is as well, though, I mean, to get on TV as a scientist, I mean, being really good at science isn't the difficult part. The difficult part is, can you be really good on TV? And if you can, you're miles ahead of 90% of all other scientists. I mean, I say that with love. My wife is a scientist and very personable. She's got great social skills. Most scientists do not have that. So they can't do TV work. And yet Brian Cox is clearly a very affable chap with a great sense of humour and understands the cultural relevance of what he's saying and is not like It's not separated off from real life. Like most people say, who are in the know, say that science just needs a better PR team, really, because the work they do is amazing. But they get mistrusted all the time because they're not very good at articulating what they're talking about. And people think of them like these weird Poindexters. So alpha male, demagogic presidents, for example, don't trust them because they literally don't trust them because they don't understand what they're all about.
Yeah, I was going to ask like why does science need PR? But yeah, you're right. It literally is underpinning all of the problems we're having right now in the world.
Yeah, exactly. let's finish off with this email from Dennis. And I as I say sometimes to you and to our listeners on the show, I sometimes give a little headline of the email on my notes so that if I don't get to it and I get to it in a couple of weeks' time, I can remember what it's about. And this is one of those emails. And a couple of weeks ago, I shortlisted this and I gave it the headline, "Man disrespects us and recommends others do the same." This is from Dennis, who says, "Hi guys, even if you don't read this email out, I thought you should know that you help me get to sleep each night."
Oh.
"I suffer from mild insomnia, which despite the term mild, can sometimes mean I don't sleep at all in the night, or I frequently wake up and am forced to just lay there with my thoughts. And this happens at least 9 to 10 times a month, with a few nights resulting in a quality rest. Over the years, I've tried many things to help myself get to sleep and failed many times. But since discovering your show about a month ago, I have slept considerably better, often putting your show on just before I lay down. Or during the night. I don't really know the exact science behind why this is the case. I thought it might also be an interesting talking point for your show. I've previously been recommended multiple treatments with suggestions such as intense exercise or music, but it also always fails. If any of the resident doctors of the Luke and Pete show know why podcasts particularly help, I'd be intrigued to find out." And there we go. He says, "I'm falling asleep while listening to someone talk is usually a bad thing. I'd like to thank you for unknowingly helping me get some much needed rest." Now, I don't mean to trivialize Dennis's issue because it's obviously horrible. Touch wood, unfortunate enough, I'm a fairly good sleeper generally. But if anyone else has got some tips to share with the Luke and Pete Show community, or as Dennis says, any doctors are listening who can help out, do that because it's an awful, awful thing. I know a few people who've got bad insomnia and it is miserable.
Everyone's different, and I think we've spoken about it before, like the doctors who study sleep frequently contract insomnia because connected insomnia because they're just so into how fucking important sleep is and how a good sleep cycle underpins everything. I said underpins a lot this episode. Underpins everything else that goes wrong with your body. So it's like sleep is the most restorative and best thing you can do with your body. Forget your John the Juice green health shakes maybe that you've stolen off a woman from the Only Wears Essex. Forget all that nonsense. Just get a good night's rest. And it's so impossible in our workaday world with our responsibilities and our mobile phones and I need to be connected all the time. We just never, ever switch off. But
have you thought about installing an echoic chamber? Does that make it better or worse?
I'd love to meet the person who has been there like longer. Like, you know, the person who sort of stayed in there for the longest time.
Yeah, they're the one probably sat in the corner of the pub with their hood up with no one around them.
Yeah, he's probably sort of confused for a man who just goes to a lot of Grateful Dead concerts.
Yeah. Pete, what's your tip for getting off to sleep?
You don't want to know it now. I don't know. I think when you're jet lagged, you become unnecessarily obsessed with sleep and how you're not getting it and how. So I just think, don't worry about it. If you're up, you're up. Go and get some food. Eat some food and invariably you'll drift off back to sleep, even if that is at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're eating at ridiculous times. Have a little snack and invariably your body will sort of go, right, Pete, you need to relax now. Let's go back to sleep. Or you can order some pretty strong tranquilizers off the internet.
Yeah, I knew that was going to go down. As soon as I asked the question, I knew that was going to make up some of the answer and I instantly regretted it.
Antihistamines.
Yeah. One of the things I've learned over the years, and there's not that many of them, obviously, but one of the things I have learned is that one of the biggest problems around things like anxiety or stress, and this can play into that, I think, because sleep would absolutely fall under that category. I can easily imagine that, is fighting against the way you're feeling or the situation you're in and not accepting it. Because part of the anxiety or the stress or the insomnia comes from fighting against what is clearly a suboptimal situation. Whereas one step along the line could be to just to accept it, understand the situation you're in. Don't fight against it. And that, for me, has always been the first step along getting past whether it's stress or anxiety or whatever it may be, any kind of not ideal mental situation, basically. That's the only thing I can offer. And thankfully, touch wood, I do need quite a lot of sleep, but I'm quite a good sleeper. So I can't offer anything else because thankfully, so far, I've not really experienced it.
Yeah, I just sort of think that anything that I've kind of angled myself like a quite fortuitous little life where I can sleep all the time.
No, but your patterns are quite up and down because you've told me before.
Since I finished doing Absolute Radio and I, like the first 2 months of the year, I settled into what you would probably describe as a 9 to 5, like going to sleep at 12 o'clock. I got to sleep at like 11. Waking up at about 7, I was going to the gym every morning. I was going to work, and I did an unheard of, like, you know, Monday to Friday for like 8 weeks in the office, and it was quite good. And then this hit, and so like my little routine has been. I was so proud of myself, Luke, that I managed to sort of get up, get into work, do what needs to be. Well, I still waste a lot of time along the way. Let's make that very clear. But I was getting into a bit of a routine that had been denied me because I was working until 1 o'clock in the morning every night for the last something like 7 years. So, like,
yeah.
I was getting a lovely little routine, and then this hit, and that is the real.
You're the real victim here. No, but seriously, I think there's a serious point in that, and I think, and I might have mentioned this before, but I think it really is, and even if I have mentioned it before, I'm going to say it again because I think it's important. A lot of the rhetoric and a lot of the internet. Website columns and newspaper columns, because people are desperate for content because they think everyone's doing nothing else, have been about, oh, here's what you can learn, here's what you can do under lockdown, you've got all this time on your hands, not enough of it is said. Don't fucking worry about it. Listen, we're all in a difficult situation, right? I've felt really tired because my pattern's been all over the place recently, even though I sleep pretty well traditionally. Don't stress about it. Don't think to yourself, oh God, I'm not getting anything done, or I'm not learning a new skill, or I'm not learning a language. All this stuff can be preposterous because no one knows the situation you're in. My advice, if people want it, would be get through it. Be as happy as you can. Get through it. Stay realistic and just look after yourselves and the people you're living with and isolating with. And that's really all you can hope for. Anything else is just a bonus. Don't be so hard on yourself all the time. Don't use words about yourself that you'd never use about other people, like lazy or whatever. I'd never use that about myself. That's what I would say. Oh, anyway. And I've spent a lot of my time sat in a spare room talking into a microphone with a little hat from an innocent smoothie on top of it. And if anyone's going to go insane, it's going to be me.
you started seeing that little hat in your vision.
Like
a first person shooter is just kind of floating in front of you all the time.
Well, so far everything's gone okay. So it's a bit of a lucky charm now. So I don't want to get
rid of it. Well, you're
like
a kind of, if you're going to sort of say, you know, you were talking about audio, these incredibly specific audio engineers who've managed to sort of rig up this minus 8 decibel studio. I mean, you're well on your way to sort of hacking your way to that situation. You managed to deaden the sound in your bedroom. I don't think we've ever put a podcast out that hasn't sounded like we're in the same room. And I've got a fucking 800 quid isolating Vox thing that sounds like a fucking submarine. Yours sounds great, and you're using a bloody hat from a smoothie.
Yeah, I'll send the picture around at some point.
I'm also
wearing a hat at the moment because my hair is so long. So it looks like the microphone is doing an impression of me.
Anyway, I bleached my hair. Yours has gone long. You just put a hat on. We both got hats on. It's the summer.
I think it's been clear for some time that this episode finished quite a while ago. So I'm going to wrap it up. Hello at Luke and Pete Show to get in touch. Oh, sorry. Hello at lukeandpeteshow.com to get in touch. At Luke and Pete Show is our destination on Twitter. We will be back on Monday with more of this nonsense. I might look into some of those Titanic conspiracy theories as requested by one of our listeners. No promises, though. Have a great weekend. Look after yourself. Stay safe. And we'll see you again soon. Say goodbye, Peter.
Goodbye, Peter.
And it's goodbye from me as well.
This was a Stakhanov production.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions
over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.